What a disaster. Sorry about that.
This is Super Fast Business with James Schramko. Helping you build your business super fast.
James Schramko here. And while I know you get busy with your day-to-day business, and for that reason, I wanted to go back to my good buddy, Tim Connolly from foolishadventure.com, and have a chat about his Tim technique. And it doesn't actually stand for his name. It's just a coincidence, I think. So I'm going to introduce Tim now, and we're going to dig right into this topic and have a little bit of a discussion around it. Welcome back, Tim.
Yo, what's up, James?
Hey, I'm just kicking back here in lovely Sydney weather, and I'm wondering what it's like over there.
I'm actually wearing a hoodie because it's a little chilly here in Phoenix. Normally, we have nice warm temperatures at this time of year, where the equivalent of other people's summers. But right today has been just a little too chilly for me.
Nice. Well, I've got some lightweight hoodies here, so we can still wear them all year round because it's in keeping with the job description, you know, especially the right. Late nighters. So could you introduce us to this idea of Tim that I've heard you talk about, and I think it is going to really touch a nerve with our average listener who's probably struggling with some of the aspects of this from time to time.
Okay. So Tim is my little acronym for time, income, and mobility. You know, me being a little clever. That's about as clever as I get, though, by making it off my name. But this whole idea of time, income, and mobility was a way to make the concept of having freedom be a little more concrete. Because when I started looking at the way I was going about trying to gain personal freedom, I was looking at it as one big concept, this idea of freedom, which, and it's so abstract, and most people can't even identify what they mean when they say they want freedom. And so that's what Tim was about. It was about to identify the three core elements of personal freedom, not political freedom or other forms of freedom that you hear out there, just yourself. And I broke it down to having time freedom, income freedom, and mobility freedom.
Right. That is a nice little formula to master if you can. I think the closest I've come to something like that in all of the things that I've encountered with business is the acronym that people use for system, which when you think about systems, they're kind of freedom from having to do things you shouldn't have to do more than once, et cetera.
System stands for saves you stress, time, energy, and money.
And I reckon the time, energy, and money is pretty close to the concept you're talking about when you're thinking about freedom.
Right. So this would be the building blocks, and system would be the way that you would implement it into your life.
Right. So have you got a framework that you step through with this?
Well, more about trying to define it in your life, because people take this idea of freedom and they make it way too abstract to put it into action in their life. So you need to figure out, like, what elements of your time do you really want to free up? Because a lot of people want they just say, oh, I need more time. I need more time. But they don't understand where to prioritize to gain that time. With income, they say, I want more income. But then they go off and they get they get a job, or they get some form of income, build a business that generates income that does not give them the ability to have more free time or the ability to have mobility. And they feel like they end up trapped.
So they're doing the classic difference between preference and performance. They will just say something but do another, and you've identified what's causing that is that maybe they haven't given it enough definition.
Right. Most people don't actually provide definitions for the words that they use. I annoy a lot of people, especially my members and my clients, where I – they'll say something to me, and then I will go back and it's like, let's define that word that you're using so that we're both on the exact same page and can understand one another. And most people have not actually given definitions to the words they like to use, like freedom and income and revenue and things like that.
Right. So they're banding around these broad terms. I love that definition exercise where you say to someone, think of the color blue. And then you ask them to think about it, and then you say, okay, now tell me about your color blue. What's it like? And they'll go, oh, it's light blue like the sky. And then other times they'll be saying it's deep blue like the ocean at night. You know, even one word can have completely different meanings to people. So I can understand how people get lost in that broad word like freedom. Something you did the other day when we were talking about an exercise that I used to do when I was learning about valuing my time better, I was talking about having someone come and mow my lawns, and you jumped on that. I think you were excited by what I was doing because when that guy came to mow the lawn, I would go up to my office and create a website. I would do a business revenue activity that would justify the expense for mowing the lawn. So I was doing this exercise in putting a monetary value on time, and you were all over that. And I can see you have a definite interest in matching up or correlating the activity and the definition of what that means.
Yeah, partly because it removes abstraction. So a lot of people think, well, I've got a housekeeper and I've got someone who mows my lawn. I got someone who cleans my pool. And yet all I do is seem to be working my butt off all the time trying to pay for all these things that I've got going out because they've never actually matched their expenditures to their revenue generating activities. They've never done that. And when you told me this framework that you had, I was like, that removes that abstraction. That gives you something definite, very concrete. So if you see that all you do when you hire all this additional support is you just have expenditures going out and no additional revenue coming in to cover those expenses, then you know you're in trouble.
Yeah, and I'm having similar conversations with students when they'll say something to me like, hey, I've got a deal where I can put a banner advertisement on a big website, and you know, if that goes well, I might look at doing it again. And I'm like, hang on a minute. What do you mean look at? You will either know or not know, right? Like the answer is you'd put a trackable link, and at the end of the campaign, in hindsight, you'll garner a decision based on fact. You'll say it brought X amount of visits. Of those visits, X percentage of them made a purchase, which resulted in X amount of dollars. And you balance that amount of dollars versus how much it cost you to put that there in the first place. And then you'll actually have a hard decision that says yes or no, instead of a vague, we'll see how it works, or maybe we'll do it again. There's no maybe about it. It's on or off. So I guess that is exactly putting definition on each little micro activity that we do. Wherever possible, we should track.
Right. And as you said, it's like, well, I don't do that so much anymore because you know for a fact that when you free up your time, it does translate into a higher quality of life. But if you've never tracked it to begin with, then you can never know. You end up having this problem of causation versus correlation. Most people think that the activities that they're doing are the things that are making them successful or even making them unsuccessful. But it could just be a correlation. They take these ideas and say, oh, it was because I did this. That's why I'm now earning this money. Like it could be, I hired this guy who's mowing my lawn and now I'm making more money from my ad campaign.
It's like that research that was in the book Spin Selling by Neil Rackham, where the top sales performers didn't even know why they were good sales performers. It took researchers sitting in the room and measuring all the data and statistics to figure out that it was a special questioning technique that was working for the top performers. It wasn't what color tie they were wearing or the color of the shirt.
They thought it was those kind of things. And also it was all about the closing questions.
Yeah, open or closed questions. Or you know, right. Every sales trainer has a module on closing. And the book really explodes that whole thing. And it's far more about the investigation and the opening, the investigation mode of the sale that causes the result in large sales. So I love that. Sometimes we think we know, but we probably don't.
Yeah, yeah. And that's usually what happens when you hear someone giving other people advice. I'm always wary of the advice that I give to my clients and my members and even on my show, because it's so easy to fall into that correlation versus causation paradox. Like, did this thing that the activity that I participated in, did that really cause the outcome that I said it caused? And it's very hard to track many things. So I don't want to get too esoteric in that, but it's something to be aware of. So that's why definitions get you away from abstraction. And the further away from abstraction you get, the better your outcomes are. They become more defined, and then they're easier to achieve.
So I guess it's a little bit along the lines of that Toyota 5-Y system, where they just drill down. And on a similar plane, there's the value-based sales methodology, which drills down into why something's important, and you get right down to the root cause rather than just accept a surface-level answer.
Right. If you can ask why usually anywhere from 5 to 7 times on something, you'll get down to the root for a personal thing, the root emotional driver. And that's usually the most important part. So like if you're in sales and you ask somebody, well, why do you want this solution? And they'll give you a surface answer. You ask again, then you'll get an even deeper answer. And you ask up to 5, maybe as much as 7 times. Going beyond 7, it gets way too abstract and it's not very useful. But somewhere in that 5 to 7 range is when you actually get down to the root reason they want something.
Yeah, it always makes me laugh when I think about the time when I was working with Mercedes-Benz, and they had marketing classifications for each of the product ranges. And for the SL series of Mercedes-Benz, the label for that was called hedonist. And I think they sort of tapped into the real reason why, you know, someone's looking at those expensive 2-seater convertible sports cars. It was,
right.
You know, they say they want it for certain reasons, but really they want it for pure hedonistic virtues. So tell me, how can we use this idea of Tim in our business?
Okay. It's more about you personally as opposed to your business. And what I mean by that is that once you define what it is that you really want in life, what kind of time do you want? What kind of income do you want? And what kind of mobility do you want? Once you've identified these three things, it ends up informing you on what kind of business to build. And so to get rid of abstraction here, let me tell you how I got to this point, and I'll try to make it fast. Years ago, I moved from Portland, Oregon down to Arizona to just get out of the rain and just get in a position. I shut down my marketing consultancy. I had a marketing agency, and I got tired of kissing CEOs' asses and stuff to get a marketing campaign launched. It was just too much trouble sitting in boardrooms and pitching. So I moved, just kept a handful of clients, and I got down to Arizona and discovered this burgeoning and growing market of swimming pool companies. And I started one. I invested in one, grew it, and was making a decent amount of money from it, but it ended up taking over my life. And in that process, I was like, man, how do I manage all these people who are running around this valley and the Phoenix metro area is just gigantic. So how do I manage all this and still have the kind of life I want where I can travel, I can go do things? And I started looking at portable technologies. And unfortunately, you still needed a ton of equipment to actually run an office from anywhere in the world back in 2004, 2005. You couldn't just do it off of a smartphone. Typing would be a pain in the butt, but otherwise you have all the power in a smartphone to be able to run most businesses. And now, but back then it was really difficult, and I started looking around and I realized I built a company that ended up eating up lots of my time. It needed to grow significantly bigger to be able to have a management team in place so that it would truly free me of being geographically controlled, because that I could leave for a while, but I couldn't stay gone for a long time, because if a major problem came up, I was still the final decision maker. And I would have to come back and solve major problems. So when you're redoing someone's pool and you're putting in new equipment, doing all kinds of repair, you got heavy equipment and stuff in their backyard, stuff goes wrong. Always goes wrong.
I can imagine.
And so it always happens. And I didn't have a big enough company yet to afford having a strong management team. I had one office manager who eventually left to stay at home with her newborn baby. But before that, I just had her and me, and I had a lead technician who could actually handle a lot of the stuff in the field, but not a true management team. And I knew that I would have to essentially double the size of my company to get to the point where I could afford that. And I was at wit's end and just decided to start selling things off instead of fixing it. And it was all because I said, hey, look at this cool opportunity. I'll invest in that. But I didn't take a look at what it would do to my personal freedom. I didn't realize that until I had a management team in place, it would lock me into being in Arizona for as long as that company existed. I couldn't just take off for long periods of time. I could take short trips, but I knew I couldn't stay away from Arizona for too long, or a major problem would come up and then I would be losing, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. So that was something that I learned in the process. I built it, and then I found out afterwards I built it incorrectly because I did not put my personal preferences into place at the very beginning.
Gotcha. So when I'm sitting down with a brand new mastermind student, I have a diagnostic audit of their business, and we do put a heavy emphasis on lifestyle design. We start out talking about what is the point, what are they trying to do here, and then we create the lifestyle they want. And I cover questions like, do you want to work from home or do you want to have an office? Do you are certain things very important to you? And then we build the business around on top of their lifestyle. And I was really mentored a lot in this by a guy that I worked for, and he used to think of it as picking your station. You pick the station you want to get to, and you make sure that when you get to that station that it's got all the things you need it to have. There's no point getting there and finding when you get there that you don't like it.
Right. So
you pick the station, you make sure there are enough options when you get there, and then you build the tracks to that station and you steam up that train and keep taking logs off the track. So it's a metaphor I keep coming back to because it works. So I guess what you're saying is, if you're sitting there right now in front of a computer, or you're walking the dog, or doing your weights in the gym, listening to the podcast, then what you should be thinking about is, what do you have right now and what would you really like, and keep everything in perspective around your personal preferences and what sort of income you would like, what sort of time that you want to commit to the business, and where do you want to be doing it?
Yeah, so I'll take some of that out of some abstraction, and I have to give some credit to Dan Andrews, who really enjoyed this idea, and he's taken it a little further. He helped me define this problem that I was having. Is when I'd tell people about time, income, and mobility, and they would say, "Well, I can't have complete mobility freedom or income freedom or time freedom all at the exact same time." And it's more like that recycle symbol, that triangle where the arrows go all the way around, pointing at each other.
Yep.
Well, that's what happens. It's a continuum. It's not a static thing. So a lot of people, what they do is they give up their time and their mobility to gain income. And that's usually a job or most small businesses. People give up their time to work their tails off inside of a business, and they're locked in. They can't go anywhere because their business requires their presence. So they've given up those two things in exchange for gaining income. And some people bought into the lifestyle design. They read The 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss, and they said, that's it. I'm going to travel the world. I'm going to throw on a backpack and I'm going to take off. And they do. They sell everything and they take off and they run around the world. And then a year later, they're completely broke because their little AdSense niche site never made them any money. They just threw up some stuff hoping that, they were going to figure out this they were going to figure out business along the way, but they didn't want to give up their mobility. So they traded their time and their income to gain mobility so they could go travel the world. But eventually what happens is that the income runs out.
Yeah. And it's a great book if you're a young single guy without a family and you don't need a lot of money.
Well, if you only buy into the part where you take off before you've actually built an asset, a lot of people ignore that part in the book, the part where he says, build this, then go do whatever it is you want to do. Most people just go do what they want to do, hoping they can build their, as Tim calls it, the muse along the way.
Well, you see, when I read that book, picture this, I had 4 kids, I had a couple of $1 million worth of debt that was funding a couple of $1 million worth of assets. And then I had this job fueling all of that and providing for the family. So I was like as far away as you could get from a young single guy with, no ties. So it was,
right.
It was a completely different compression chamber for me.
Yeah. You would have had the muse that you would have had to have built would require a much larger size.
300,000 a year was my target. That was my step off. That was
right.
I had to reach that before I could turn off that inconvenience of having to go somewhere else for 9 hours a day.
Right. And Tim Ferriss is talking about making a few thousand to as much as 10,000 a month. And that would be sufficient for most people. Because in the United States, I bring up the fact that the median household income is $50,000 in the U.S.
Right.
Approximately. That's the household, and most households in the United States are 2 income earners. So that means most people in the United States have 2 people working in the house, 2 or more, earning a total of $50,000 a year.
Yeah, so it's much easier for them to set up something independent of a JOB, I guess, compared to people who've ratcheted themselves into such a precarious scenario as I had. And this all happened when the US bad loans came out, and I could see the winds of change on the cusp.
Right.
So I'm like, I had a ticking time bomb on my hands.
Right. Yeah. And that's a terrible situation to be in when things outside of your control can come in and really destroy the life that you're building.
I want to just jump on 2 things you said. One is control. And my mentor taught me about control. And he taught me that banks get you on the drip, and that basically the average person will just surrender themselves to other people or other corporations and give away their life. I would sit at that desk thinking, I am just deferring my life here. I'm just sitting here listening to crap,
dealing with people that I don't enjoy, building up someone else's empire. And I read about people traveling around the world. Like Tim Ferriss sounds like he's having fun. And I was stuck. Yeah, so the other thing you mentioned was work. And I think people use that as a pretty broad label where they go to work or they do work. And I think some people confuse activity with productivity.
Or effectiveness.
Yeah, where they're and I was reading a book about willpower, and it estimates that most people are spending like a third of their day just spinning their wheels.
Well, part of it is because we're trained to. So anyone who's ever gone out to get a job, you go there and you have to act busy because you're required to be there 8 hours a day. And there isn't really 8 hours of work for you to do that actually affects the ability for you to retain your job.
So they're measuring the wrong thing, aren't they? They're measuring because some guy in, you know, early on in the industrial age decided that it should be Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, and that's just became the convention. And as you and I know, we truly know, because for me it's been 5 years since I've stepped out of the job, I know how different it is. So when you can work your peak energy zones and when you can work purely on things that excite you, where you can add the most value, you really can change that whole convention, and especially having just traveled around the world for about a month. I guess the majority of the population are droning about in a trance, and at some point they may not have even thought about what they're doing.
Right, which is an important thing to understand that gets back to that idea of definition, is that most people can't define the things that they want in life, and they just want their life to be better. And so anything that comes along, buy these clothes, buy this car, buy this TV, and buy this food, junk food or whatever it is, these things will make your life better if you buy them. And they just do. They just unconsciously buy it. And that's on the consumer side. The other is on the job side. Oh, I've got to get a job. I've got to get one. And never once saying, well, will this job actually create the life that I want? And that was something that when I built that pool company, and this is when I really discovered all this, because I built a success that I hated. And I looked at it and I said, oh, the problem is that my income, it's not the amount of it that's the problem. It's the way it's derived. Where is it coming from? It's coming from something that requires my presence. And that was – once I understood that aspect, I couldn't have mobility because – my income, the thing that allows me to pay for life and to pay for travel and to pay for everything that we want, required me to be someplace. And that right there started to take away a lot of my time. And that's when I started formulating all this concept of the Tim.
So you had the actual scenario that most people have, and you came up with the Tim, but I'd think you should probably share with us what you actually did, like what were the steps that happened, and where are you now?
Okay, so the first thing I looked at was the most important part, which was income. And back then I called it non-geographically based revenue. I just made it a little simpler and just called it income.
So you've focused heavily on your NGBR ratio.
Yeah. So I said, okay, I'll just call this thing income. And what it was is that I wanted to make sure that any income that I earned, doesn't matter the amount of it at first, it matters where it comes from. Does that require me to show up someplace? So a lot of people, they look at the internet and they think, oh, I'm going to do that and earn passive income, which they don't even have a true definition of passive income. And they think, oh, because that's what I want. And ultimately, that would give you the most freedom is if you truly had passive income, which to get that, you're going to need, large financial assets that are earning you interest and capital gains so that you don't actually have anything to manage. That would be passive income. But a business is not passive. It requires management. And when you're going to build a business to build your asset base, then you need to make sure your ability to manage it does not require you to show up someplace. So that was the very first thing. I needed to make sure my income was not geographically based. It had to be able to be earned anywhere in the world.
Right.
Okay. So that was the first thing that I looked at. And then since I had this business that required a larger management team, which meant I needed to nearly double its revenue to accomplish this. And at that point, I was just burnt out from the company. I really hated my success that I had gotten from it and decided I was going to sell it off. But I found out that there wasn't any buyers willing to cough up nearly $1 million for a company.
Because they were buying a job?
Well, partly because they were buying a job, but partly because there wasn't any big players wanting to buy a company.
So you didn't have a look at that when you were setting it up, I imagine, which is
No. I just thought, hey, well, because I didn't really think I was going to have an exit. I thought, hey, I'll build this as a revenue source. It will be an asset. I'll have a management team in place. And that's what I thought I was going to end up building eventually. But I didn't have, eventually, that's always a warning sign when you throw in the word eventually I'll have these things.
That is an interesting thing because eventually has quite a different effect. It can help people lose weight if they permit themselves to eat the treat later instead of having to have it right now. They eat substantially less. it's probably works the same with riches. If they're eventually going to have it, they actually end up being able to defer it for a long time.
Right. But unfortunately, the thing that I was saying eventually on was a management team instead of building it early. I should have built the management team as one of the very first things I did when I invested in this company. And instead, I delayed it and just put in like supervisor level people, not people who were capable of actually managing a division of the company. And that was a problem. And I saw this too late.
Isn't that interesting? Because we were speaking recently on foolishadventure.com, your show, where we were talking about hiring staff. And I was talking about going for that more senior person quite early on.
Right. And this was something that I wish I had done and did not do until I got to a point where I hated what I had. So, and I couldn't find a buyer for the company as a whole. So I just started downsizing the company by selling off pieces of it to people that could buy the different parts. And I obviously was not getting as much money as I could have gotten, and I definitely didn't get it all in one lump sum.
Gotcha. So you sold it piecemeal.
And yes.
The attentive listeners will have been getting some tremendous notes so far. So think about management early on, and if you're going to build a company, think about who's going to buy it before you even start building it, and you can make good decisions that way.
Yeah, even if you think you're going to keep this thing for the rest of your life, which is what I thought was going to happen when I built it. So I started downsizing it until and I literally this my state of mind at the time, I hated my life. Okay, I hated getting up in the morning. I literally hated every aspect of my life, which then turned it on to my wife and my daughter. Like my personal relationships were starting to suffer because I just did not want to face this company anymore. So I started downsizing it, started getting rid of parts of it, and I got to the point where I had one technician out doing pool cleaning. I didn't have a part of the company that actually did the remodeling anymore. I didn't have a repair person anymore, and I had a part-time office assistant and myself. And I restructured the company so that the I had my one technician running around doing some cleaning and stuff. So that brought in a decent amount of money every month. You know, it's like steady, recurring income. And the office assistant handled like ordering things and making sure all my bookkeeping was taken care of and all the government filings were handled and sales taxes and all that stuff. And what I did was I found other professionals in the industry and started subcontracting tons of work to these people. So anytime my customers or even ones that I picked up, new customers, I would actually give the work over to these subcontractors. I would bill it, I would get paid, I would take my cut, and then I would pay them. And
so it became a marketing business.
Yes, yes. It all because I was good at that part. That was the one thing I was actually good at.
Well, it makes sense. You make that your strength, and that's coincidentally the part that many technical businesses suck at.
Right, right. So what happened then was I got it to the point where I took that year that I started doing this, which was 2006. So that fall of 2006, I took 12 weeks off. But I could not take them off consecutively. So it was like every other week I took off for so that would have been 20 for like half the year. I took off like every other week, which was awesome. But it still didn't allow me to go and spend a month abroad, which is something that I like doing. I like finding a new place in the world and hanging out there for a month. And I couldn't do that. I had to come back. I had to be around. So I still didn't have the exact life that I wanted. So then I eventually just sold that piece off and just said, okay, I'm finally out of this business.
Did you have to wait for something else to come along before you let go of that one?
I just had to get my head back in. I was still doing consulting. And since I'm a business consultant, mostly focused on marketing, I still had a handful of clients and I just went back into doing that. I just spent more time doing consulting, taking on more clients, and then that replaced my income. And I was a lot happier because I could do that anywhere in the world. I could just get on Skype, get on my cell phone, and I could handle everything that needed to be done anywhere. And so that really freed things back up for me.
So what can people do if they're not a marketing consultant?
Well, they can figure out like how to get their control of their income. So again, it's not about how much your income is. It's about where it comes from. And so that's the first thing to look at. And as I was saying, I was a consultant, so that meant I was selling time for dollars and still am. I still like doing it. I enjoy working on other people's companies. So there is that selling time for dollars. So some people are averse to that because they think it's like a job. But when you can do it on your terms and you get the clients to agree to your terms, you can do pretty much whatever you want. And so that's the first thing to focus on. It doesn't have to be marketing consulting. It could be any kind of labor that people are willing to pay you for. That could be a start, or it could be that you focus on building a business that does not require you. So that's what most people are attracted to the internet marketing world, is that they want to build an online business so that they can free up where their income is coming from. And that could be from a drop shipping company so that you don't even have to worry about manufacturing products. It could be in affiliate marketing, which that's where you got your start, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I built up my first six figures a year from one software affiliate website that I just went deep on. And then I leveraged my skills from that across into different business models. But that is exactly how I started. And from all the Tim formula, it worked out pretty well because the website was doing the work and I just had to steer it and, you know, grow it. So it was highly leveraged. And I still use the same business model to this day. It's one of my favorite business models, is the affiliate recommendation model. And then you add a little bit of hot pepper on top, which is adding a bonus. And that actually accelerates it because you have a massive advantage over your competitors and you now acquire the customer's details and you turn them into a highly qualified customer list. So I was only ever focused on buyers, not on list building, not on blogging or, you know, just putting words on a blog for passion reasons or whatever. I was going for that commercial buyer.
Yeah, there definitely is a big difference between a buyer's list and an opt-in list. That's like a whole nother topic right there. But back onto like what they can do. So the other would be if you're already in a business, then you need to figure out where the points in your business that can be changed that will allow you the freedom that you're looking for. You may not want to go anywhere. You may not want to travel like I did. You may just want to be able to have more free time. And that may require putting in the right software systems, or it might require the right human systems to be able to free up your time.
And I think also it's a strategy thing. Well, I have this discussion a lot with people who start out on the path of dealing with local businesses, and their simple plan is sell them a cheap website, undercut the people out there in the market, build the website, hand it over and pocket that. They see that money as free money because they've got no costs. But when I point out to them, they're just actually now becoming a high-paid web designer. The better business model is to get someone else to build the website so they can go and sell five more instead of sitting there learning HTML, and then they can hire a project manager to deal with the customer. And now they've actually stepped a few layers back from the business. They've got someone else doing the actual technical work, someone else doing the customer service work, and their job is, you know, marketing, conductor of the orchestra.
Right, right. And a bit of management, team management too. You know, hopefully the project manager can handle that, but you still need to manage that project manager. And hopefully you've got more than one of those, as I've learned.
Yes. Two's better than one. For sure.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So that's, I guess it's really the basis of this whole time, income, and mobility. I know this conversation's kind of been all over the place, and it wasn't like the system that I had kind of framed in my head before we sat down and just started chatting about it. But I think people should just look at where in their life can they get self-determination and focus on those elements, focus on building the kind of business that will actually allow them to get the life that they want and not one where their life supports their business.
Beautiful. Well, I think that's a good place to end. And hopefully we haven't dragged around in too many places. But there's been some interesting discoveries along the way in this one and a few references people might go and investigate to get further definition on that. But my overriding point is question everything. Remove all the assumptions that have been placed on you, instilled in you from early age. I quite often, I guess, disrupt my the teachers at the school who they start programming my kids from, you know, fifth class that they better do this or else they're not going to get into university. And then I question the whole theory behind that. You know, going to university leads to a nice job as a technical specialist, and the handcuffs of society are well in place by then. So question everything. Think about why you're in the situation you're in right now and allow yourself to engage activities that are going to get you a different life outcome than what the majority of people seem to put up with. And hopefully there's some inspiration in this. We'll stick around and answer comments on the blog. And I think we should get back together and talk about this in more depth about having your own business. I think that'd be a great topic because having your own business is certainly what helped me get out of it. It was good to have an affiliate site, but when I took a business approach and created a deeper structure, I found that I was still able to have a high works without me factor, which is my way of scoring that the time, and still be able to bring in good income. So we'll have another discussion on this, I'm sure.
All right. Yeah, I can talk ad nauseum about this stuff.
So Tim, until then, I'm doing what you did to me.
But you don't have a tagline for me to say.
But you know, when you said that to me in your episode, I didn't know there was a tagline, so it was
That's why I just plug it in and then I can edit the part out.
We'll have to come up with a tagline for Internet Marketing Speed. Until then, speed up your business or something. All right. Well, I'll catch you soon, Tim. Thanks very much. Now, be sure to check out Tim's blog, foolishadventure.com. There's some great podcasts on this particular topic that's really Tim's specialty. And until next time, we'll catch you.
All right.
Discover how to build your business
super fast.
Check out superfastbusiness.com.